back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Sandy, I haven't said this in a while. But, man, it's just great having your voice on the airways. It truly is, and I'm honored, man, that you have decided to do this. And since the first time I had you on, something special about the way you do the things you do and with your knowledge, and it's so vast, and it touches a lot of different areas. And, again, you make it understandable to average Joes like myself. So, man, it's great to have you on the airways. Let's do this. The CDC, Sandy, is relaxing all of these rules, many of these rules, with COVID. Have we come to a point, Sandy, that you talked about a year or so ago when you talked about eventually this is going to be treated similar to the flu? Have they gotten enough? Has the CDC gathered enough information, Sandy, now that this is not going to be as terrifying as it's been?
Well, I think it's all empirical. The difference between a pandemic and an endemic. Endemic is basically the flu. It's something that it's a disease that just about everyone is susceptible to getting, and a large percentage of people get it. But it's not particularly dangerous to our medical system or to society. And so, I think that definitely the CDC is, as they look at COVID, they're beginning to think this thing's beginning to look more like an endemic. And I think the way they decide that is by what it's doing to the hospital system and how many people are in the hospitals as the result of the disease, and therefore how much of a threat it poses to the medical system. I think COVID still poses a threat to individuals, so does the flu. People who are particularly vulnerable to respiratory diseases and the potential complications of it can die from the flu, and they're continuing to die from COVID. I think we're having deaths from COVID at the rate of about 200 or to 300 a day in the United States, which is a lot of deaths. But it's not... It is apparently not burdening the health system. And so they're beginning to look at COVID and saying, look, we've got to treat this as an endemic. We've got to take down our guard. We can't cripple our economy. We can't continue to impose restrictions on people's lives, particularly because the country has COVID fatigue. We have gotten used to not wearing masks. Asking people to wear masks again will be difficult. And I think the CDC realizes there better be a real and palpable danger that we're asking the people to react to before we begin to raise that kind of concern again.
So, Sandy, do you think that we're at the point because we've had enough people inoculated and the fact that more people than we even know have contracted COVID and never knew it, and that immunity that they were talking about, we've gotten there?
Well, sure. I mean, it's a confluence, and I don't even think the medical community can figure out exactly the extent to which we've had a confluence of several circumstances. The disease itself has morphed in the direction of being less severe, apparently, and more transmissible. So more people are getting it, but it's a less severe disease when they get it. Maybe it's less severe for some people because they've been vaccinated or have already had the disease. But in any case, the end result of all that is we seem to have a disease we face that is very transmissible, but not as dangerous to us as the initial version of COVID when we first saw it 2 years ago. So the end result of that is we're going to treat it differently. We also have more experience. 2 years ago when we were all worried about it, we were actually worried about dying from it. Now most of us are worried about the inconvenience of being quarantined or otherwise sick for a week.
You know, Sandy, before we move, I want to now have you chime in on what's happening with the monkeypox. And because, you know, that's really, it's kind of similar. If you look at how long monkeypox has been around, and the fact that, you know, it was taken lightly. Initially, and where the origin of it was, and it's similar, you know, then, you know, with what took place when COVID came in. We were told that there are different factors. Certain people were going to be susceptible. You know, monkeypox, we've heard gay men having sex and those kind of things. The rest of us don't need to worry about any of those things. Sandy, it's turning out that that's not solely the case, that there are other things, and did we take this too lightly?
Well, we'll find out, won't we, in terms of the outcome. But, you know, it turns out that there's going to be a constant stream of diseases that come out of that arise in animals and spread to humans. There's some new virus that they found in China that relates to shrews, little right. tiny mites carry a disease, and maybe those shrews can spread it to humans, or maybe humans got it from direct contact with shrews. But, you know, monkeypox came out of monkeys, and Ebola came from monkeys, and AIDS came from monkeys. And so it turns out that viruses, many of them, I think I read that probably 3/4 of the ones that humans are susceptible to are actually came from animals. So we're going to see a constant stream of new and different viruses that we face. Happily, monkeypox is apparently susceptible to the and protected against by the smallpox virus vaccination. So we do have an arsenal that will help defend people from monkeypox. And I just heard today that Wisconsin is getting a fairly large shipment of vaccination material that will protect the populace from monkeypox. So do I think it poses the same threat as COVID? No, I don't think it does.
So, Sandy, I want to move quickly from that conversation to Ukraine. The Wall Street Journal this morning, Ukraine scrapes to pay its soldiers as Western funds slow to arrive. You know, you hear about the great heroes, the Ukrainian military, and those guys who are on the front lines fighting, and you don't think about money. Well, we don't. We're not there fighting. And so they're fighting for their countries. But we fail to understand they have families, and their families need to be sustained while they're got their lives on the line. And so normally people who are in the militaries across the earth are paid during the time they're there. But it turns out that Ukraine is suffering mightily and don't have the resources to pay the men who are on the front line fighting. Sandy, we've kind of heard that a little bit with Russia too. At some point in time, that begins to wear on. Excuse me, those men who are fighting, that their families aren't being taken care of.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, some of the war crimes that are alleged to have occurred by the Russian soldiers are probably simply the Russian soldiers who are apparently, I mean, the conscripted Russian soldiers are paid very low wages, very low wages. And so it's probably very likely that someone like that is going to steal a candelabra or something of value that they find as a way to essentially compensate themselves and their families for what they're going through. It's the way the Roman Legion funded its legions, was essentially looting and pillaging. It's war is a terrible thing. It's doing a terrible thing to the people of Ukraine, as well as the economy of Ukraine, and of course the soldiers who bear the brunt of the problems of warfare. And supposedly we were We've committed already more than $53 billion worth of aid to Ukraine, and about $9 billion of that is weaponry. So apparently a lot of it is money.
Yes.
So where has that money gone? So, I mean, possibly the soldiers aren't getting the money because it's lining the pockets of other people in Ukraine.
You know, Sandy, Kiev is forced to print money to cover the cost of defending against Russia's invasion, which has plummeted Ukraine's economy. Now, you would think, as they're talking about what this says again, the Western funds are slow to arrive. So when you ask what's happening with the money, a lot of it, or some of it, clearly is going towards paying the military of Ukraine. American dollars, it wouldn't surprise me.
Apparently it's not getting to them, or it's not getting to the soldiers. This article suggests the soldiers aren't getting paid. So I do think out of this war, in retrospect, there will be some kind of audits done. And like almost all wars, we'll find out that when we start sending billions of dollars into a war zone, only a portion of that money gets directed where we intended it to go, and a bunch of the money gets sidestepped. And the problem with Ukraine is that it has a long history of extreme corruption. So, yes, maybe Ukraine was headed in the direction of cleaning up corruption, but sending it $53 billion of various kinds of assistance is going to open that wound and open that potential for corruption.
You know, Sandy, those dollars, as you stated, will be unaccounted for. And let me ask you, so the United States government can't do anything about that, even once it audits all of those things. That's the price of war, right? I mean, I remember with the Iraqi war and Operation Desert Storm, and when they first went after Saddam Hussein, and there were conversations about semi-trailers full of $100 bills that disappeared that Saddam Hussein had, and nobody ever talked about what happened to all of that money. But is that the booty that generally happens in war that nobody wants to talk about?
Yeah, there's clearly when lots of money, Afghanistan, we sent lots of money.
Sandy, you got to hold on. Got to run to a break. I'm sorry. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines in Abilene. How you doing?
Very good, Earl. I was speculating an idea a while back about the Ukraine, and see if your guest agrees. If the U.S. dollar is far stronger than the ruble out there, then if the United States took a whole bunch, you know, got out the printing presses and made ones, fives, and twenties, and then stuck them in drones and flew them above a battlefield, and so all of a sudden these bills start flying down from the sky, U.S. dollars, both sides would go ape. And the battle would stop because they'd be too busy scooping up the bills, right? And we could probably do $2 million worth of that, and it would be far more cost-effective than taking $53 billion in mysterious top-secret money.
Well, it's the stuff that a funny movie could be made out of, at least. Actually, one thing you said that isn't true, the ruble actually is very, very strong right now. It's stronger than it's ever been as compared to the rest of the currencies, primarily because of the way that Russia has reacted to the sanctions and the way they've required payment for energy. But you're right that money, mana, I think the Bible wrote about it, right? Manna, money from heaven, essentially, would definitely have an influence on people, and would probably distract them from whatever it is they were doing.
Yeah, and they're throwing lobbing shells into nuclear power plants. There's nothing crazy about taking, and low denominations would make the difference, because you'd have to have a whole pocket full of them, and then they'd get scattered all around, not only in Russia, but in Belarus and all the other surrounding countries. And you were talking about the ruble being strong. It's only been strong in a short period of time because part of what Russia is trying to do is gather gold, and they're forcing everybody to buy gold with rubles. And so, but there's only so much tonnage of gold in the world, so they're going to basically, their opportunity is going to disappear pretty quick. And so this idea of being able to do, whether it's a distraction or to just change the dynamic totally. And that's part of what I was... Oh, and the second thing I was going to raise on this, if you know anything about John F. Kennedy, just before he was killed, he decided to make U.S. Treasury notes. And the Federal Reserve was furious. They wanted the Federal Reserve notes. And so Kennedy was dead within weeks. And there's always been a conspiracy about that. Now, if Biden were to do this with Treasury notes... then the Federal Reserve would have no say over it. And it would also be an interesting tracking problem, you know, for all the bills coming interstate or international currency exchanges would notice Treasury notes instead of Federal Reserve notes.
Hey.
So it could create a whole different dynamic with the right wing.
Hey, Abalone, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate
sure.
it.
Well, it's interesting. I just wonder whether I was going to ask him whether he'd tried ayahuasca. kind of wild ideas. Just wonder where they came, from whence they came, a little bit.
You know, Sandy, I was reading the other day about the fact that how can I forget the president, Zelensky, is starting to lose favor somewhat. He's not as popular as he had been. I don't know if it's so much, Sandy, that, you know, the movie star kind of celebrity that was attached to him early on in the skirmish, as it's gone on and on and on. He's, you know, the movie stars were meeting with him. Everybody was meeting with him. And all those things, as you stated, once it got to the ground war, those things would be starting to dissipate. It's going to be cold there soon. And the longer this goes on, the more people aren't going to be just so excited about having Zelensky as he's traveled the world and the celebrity bit.
Well, I mean, let's just talk about support that he has in Ukraine, which is where it really matters. But I mean, obviously, there'll be waning support for the sanctions, for instance, as Europe experiences all kinds of hardships. One reported today is the fact that their rivers are drying up from the drought and heat they're experiencing, and the rivers drying up is causing coal deliveries to be impossible because barges can't pass on the Rhine and the Danube and these major rivers that are like canals to Europe. And so the sanction problem for energy is going to become more severe because their recourse to other energy sources is made more difficult. But in Ukraine itself, obviously, there was never unanimity behind Zelensky with respect to the steps he was taking in opposition to the Russian actions. It's a little bit, if you look at it, the history of Ukraine is relatively short, but there are plenty of Americans. But let's just look at a statehood. Wisconsinites really love to be in Wisconsin and talk about how they really wouldn't want to live in Illinois. But if their lives were on the line, I suspect they might accept Illinois status and give up Wisconsin status, And we think that the Russian-Ukraine status is a huge differential. But for a bunch of people in Ukraine, Tom, Dick, and Mary in Ukraine, they probably are indifferent to what flag they fly and are more interested in a stable and normal life. And so the longer this war goes on, the more that Tom, Dick, and Mary's, I'm trying to think of three Ukrainian names that might fit that, will have a question about how much they're in favor of war and bloodshed as opposed to simply changing the flags they fly and the differential they might experience in terms of government. And for Tom, Dick, and Mary, that differential might be relatively small. So, I think that it's pretty clear that there will, and, you know, in the last couple of months, Zelensky's had to announce that he's had to arrest or fire hundreds of what have been called collaborators. But I think in a different time and from a different slant, those people might be called political dissidents.
All right, so hold the thought. Got to go to a break. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Show as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy. And you know, Sandy, man, I guess I can be considered fickle. The high is 73. I'm not ready for a high of 73. But I was complaining the other day when it was 85.
Develops sort of a princess taste for weather, right? What is the exact? So I guess Earl likes weather that's between 77 and 79 degrees, right? Those are.
Yeah,
like
you
Earl
know.
Likes room temperature weather.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the room has to be just the right temperature.
85. I was out the other day with 80 at a couple parks, 85 degrees. I'm saying, man, it's too hot. And now I'm hearing the high is 73, and I just stepped out for a moment, and I could feel a little tinge of fall.
Chilly.
Yeah, I'm not ready for that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I got you.
Maybe about 79. I don't know. Is there a difference between 73 and 79 that you can feel?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. In fact, that's why I think that centigrade, I sort of got kind of continentalized about the whole centigrade and particularly the centigrade system.
So tell us what the difference is.
Well, each there's 0 to 100 degrees centigrade. Zero is the freezing temperature. 100 degrees is the boiling temperature for water. So we have 212 degrees. We have 180 degrees in that same spread.
Right.
So each one of our degrees is a much smaller increment of change of heat, and the centigrade temperatures are a little bit bigger. So to me, centigrade makes a little more sense. It's not cutting it quite as fine. And the difference between 20 degrees centigrade and 23 degrees centigrade, you pretty much understand.
So, Sandy, I want to now go back to Ukraine. And I was reading this article in today's Washington Post this morning. Less than 100 miles east, artillery salvos pound Ukrainian defensive positions as Russian forces inch forward. But below the surface of this sprawling Donbass coal field, a dwindling number of miners are still working, extracting a fuel that is emblematic of one of Ukraine's biggest challenges. The Kremlin is robbing this nation of the building blocks of its economy, its natural resources. After nearly 6 months of fighting, Moscow's sloppy war has yielded at least one big reward: expanded control over some of the most mineral-rich lands in Europe. Ukraine harbors some of the world's largest reserves of titanium and iron ore, fields of untapped lithium, and massive deposits of coal. Collectively, they are worth tens of trillions of dollars. Sandy, do you think Russia knew what was there? Well, they had to know because that used to be a part of the USSR. Did they know those resources were there?
Yeah, I mean, what I've been criticizing U.S. policy about is the fact that we totally misunderstood the extent to which Ukraine is critical, strategically important and critical to Russia, whereas it has not ever been viewed as being strategically or critically important to the interests of the United States or the West. And it's the reason I think that Germany was probably hell-bent on not approving the inclusion of Ukraine into NATO, and if not Germany, other of the European countries who would have blackballed that. And the reason is that they understood the socio-political importance and the geopolitical implications of Ukraine to Russia as compared to Ukraine to the West. Ukraine is a pivotally important thing to Russia, and to us, it ends up being sort of a source of philosophical debate, ideological debate, but not a matter of critical importance. And we've demonstrated that, all of us, the Western Europe and the United States, by the fact that we aren't going to commit any troops to Ukraine in this battle, nor are we willing to escalate this battle in any manner that would put our national defense and our national treasure at risk.
You don't foresee, it's been a while now, and so the United States has weighed this over and over and over, Sandy, and it's clear now that what you just said is correct. We are not going to escalate it any more than it already is. Do you think that the United States is aware of the mineral wealth that is there?
Oh, I'm sure we are. I'm sure we are. I mean, you know, we have intelligence. Ukraine is a leaky ship. It's always been sort of the center for bilateral intelligence. Ever since the end of the USSR, the Ukraine has been the place where intelligence is gathered greatly about Russia and about the West, because it's sort of a melding pot for those interests. So I'm confident we have a great deal of knowledge about what's in Ukraine, and we have a great deal of involvement in Ukraine. This corrupt country was available for purchase by Western interests as well as by Russia. And of course, Ukrainian special interests were busily trying to purchase influence in the United States, as seen by Hunter Biden and other ways in which they clearly were trying to buy influence.
So, Sandy, that mineral
world. The head of the campaign for Donald Trump, his biggest client as a lobbyist was Ukraine.
You know, Sandy, that mineral wealth that they're talking about here, $10 trillion, that's not a mere pittance. And when you talk about lithium and minerals needed for the future, the technology of these nations, that's certainly worth fighting for, right? If you're Russian.
Maybe if lithium was viewed as being that scarce, but there's an article in the Wall Street Journal today all about the vast sources of lithium in South America. Okay. I think there are vast sources of lithium around the world. I do think what we're going to end up with is environmental concerns about what is the impact of mining lithium, refining lithium, and then disposing of lithium. So we're going to move from sort of an environmental enthusiasm about electric cars to some environmental skepticism as time goes on, when we begin to see the implications of building and creating batteries for electric cars.
You know, Sandy, it also says Ukraine would also lose a myriad of other reserves, including stores of natural gas, oil, and rare earth minerals. Essential for high-tech components that could hamper Western Europe's search for alternatives to imports from Russia and China. So behind all of this, Sandy, the more, you know, you delve into this, it's more than, you know, just something that Russia has haphazardly entered into. Clearly, it's a harbinger of their future, and they're willing to do whatever it takes in order to hold on to that.
Well, and it also is something that should alert us to the dangers of a U.S. policy which is designed to isolate a place like Russia and all of its interests, and to isolate China. You know, Mongolia, which is not a part of China, but Mongolia as a country is one of the richest countries in rare earth metals. And of course, it lies between Russia and China. And if we isolate Russia and China, I can almost assure you that Mongolia will as well be isolated. So when we start creating isolation, and when we break down globalization, we will break down the access of Western Europe and America to all of these vital resources. And when we talk about the geographic scale of Russia and China, it's much, much geographically bigger than the United States. It's bigger than the United States and China combined. It's a huge geographic territory, and to talk about it isolating it from the rest of the world is, in my book, crazy.
So, Sandy, when and I see you on the phone line, we'll come to you in a second. But Sandy, as you know, the winter is going to be upon that region real soon, and so what I want to ask you is, certainly Russia is looking at that right now and planning, and so is Ukraine. What changes, what impact is the fact that we're coming towards the winter months going to have in the next several months in the planning of this war?
Well, I guess Germany had a surprise about that very same issue when they tried to take Stalingrad. Winter
Sandy,
definitely.
Sandy, hold a thought. I'm sorry, hold a thought. Got to go to a break. I see you, Dave. When we come back, we'll get to you. It's Friday. It's Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, and I see you, Dave, we'll come to you. Sandy, I was asking you about the oncoming winter, and you were talking about what Germany was able to find out about war in Russia during the winter.
The Russian plane, the plane that runs from Moscow to Germany, first of all, it's an area of substantial snowfall and extreme cold. What happened to Germany was that they were remote from where they lived and where their supply lines were, and they got isolated around what was then called Stalingrad, now St. Petersburg, and suffered great losses. That will be different. What will happen probably in a war between Russia and Ukraine is that, yes, Russia's supply lines will be strained more, but mainly I think it will get frozen, frozen in place. So we'll end up with static lines, not as much warfare going on, and basically a slow motion kind of conflict that will endure through the war, with great hardship for the troops who have to stay out there in the cold and maintain their lines. But it'll begin to look a little more like Korea when we had a long stalemate with a front in Korea.
But let's go to Dave. Hey, Dave, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Yeah, good morning. I was finding your discussion about Ukraine's resources very interesting. But from my perspective, what we're witnessing with our proxy war against Russia is the implementation of the Wolfowitz Doctrine, which, if you're not familiar with it, it's basically the expansion of the Monroe Doctrine to the entire globe. And you can look it up on Wikipedia, but a brief summary is, and I'll read, it's a one-sentence summary here. It says, our first objective is to prevent the re-emergence of a new rival, either on the territory of the former Soviet Union or elsewhere, that poses a threat on the order of that posed formerly by the Soviet Union. This is a dominant consideration underlying the new regional defense strategy and requires that we endeavor to prevent any hostile power from dominating a region whose resources would, under consolidated control, be sufficient to generate global power. So there you have it. And this was written in the early 90s when the Soviet Union was breaking up. United States foreign policy was to make a move for total global domination. Look it up, Wolfowitz Doctrine.
No, absolutely. The neocons that he represented had this very expansive view of American hegemony. It was the flip side. Some people viewed Pax Americana as when we would retreat and simply preserve peace in America, but the more dominant view was the neocon view that Pax Americana was a time for America to flex its muscle and make sure that America would maintain its dominant position in the world. It's the same instinct that is causing us, I believe, to be so hostile to China now, because here we have China emerging as a potentially dominant economic force, and there are those in America who have a view that America must be dominant in order to satisfy its ambitions instead of simply satisfying the needs and wants of its people.
You know, right, go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
Sandy, you know, we could almost go along with that Pax Americana if America was a righteous country. Instead, what we've seen and over the years, it's become more and more and more thoroughly corrupt. So, you know, do we really want to spread our corruption throughout the rest of the world?
Yes, well, we do.
Well, you know, the other part is, you know, the old expression, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so I think the problem is that the more powerful a government becomes in the world, the more likely it is to flex its muscle for its own for its own benefit rather than for the general benefit of the people of the world. And so I think it's almost oxymoronic. I don't think you can have sort of an empire's type control over the vast world and expect that empire to be totally charitable and assume the interests of the welfare of the world at large. We can't even do that within the United States.
But you know, Dave and Sandy, it's and Sandy, this goes back to what you've been saying all these years. Those times have long since passed. The American people are still caught up in that time when we were that. But the rest of the world, so through our military might, we put strangleholds on other nations now. We talk about other nations. We're not going to allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. But never mind the other things that we do. And the American people don't want to adhere to any of those things, Dave and Sandy. They don't want to even look at that.
Our Secretary of State Blinken has talked about how the hegemony is a thing that's in the rearview mirror, that hegemony used to be the doctrines of real politics, but no longer does America believe in hegemony. And that's what they assert about all the other countries. So the hegemony of Russia is to be ignored. The hegemony of China is to be ignored. But America, meanwhile, is asserting its hegemony in the neocon version that was just described by Dave. So, it's almost like a sociopath who can't recognize what they're doing themselves and can gaslight whatever it is that's happening to and attribute it to others, other countries.
You know, Sandy and Dave, how do we get, again, the American people to hear this conversation? They're not going to hear it in most places. As a matter of fact, 99.9% of the airwaves aren't going to have conversations about this. And many of the listeners aren't going to believe this because emotionally they could never believe that our nation could be engaged in this kind of thing, because this is the very kind of thing that we condemn other nations for.
Well, you know, I would revert to using a term that might make me sound Trump-like by saying what really America ought to worry about with respect to the welfare is Americans first. So I guess rather than say America first, I would say Americans first. And I think if we had a policy that really worried about Americans' welfare, and we began to weigh the welfare of Americans against our expenditures that are designed at this world domination, we could step back from world domination and start to worry about American welfare. And that would be a good balance.
Hey Dave, thank you very much for the call. Let's go squeeze Donald in quickly. Yes, sir, Donald, thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Yeah, I know you're coming near the end of the show. Quick comment. I hope this show is recorded. This is one of your better shows. You didn't have that parrot on from Stolten. There was good dialogue. This is one of the best shows you've ever had, Earl, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. That's Sandy Williams.
That was my main comment. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for listening, man.
You betcha.
Sandy, you say what?
Oh, shucks.
Okay. You guys have a good weekend,
man. Amen. Thank you. You know, Sandy, the truth of the matter is we've got to look at our nation, look it in the eye, and say we've got to do better, right?
Well, I just think we ought to be more patriotic than we are. I think we ought to really be patriotic to the welfare of Americans and to make America the greatest place for Americans to be and live. And, you know, like I said to the fellow who talked about how would it be to live in a country, in a world that is dominated by China? The Norwegians live in a country that's dominated by America, and they do very well. In fact, they do better than Americans. And so I think Americans have to get over this principle of domination and start focusing on what it is that Americans need for Americans. And it isn't the Trump America, make America great again, or America first. Those were all principles of American government. I'm talking about the principles of American people. And if the American people started really looking at things from the standpoint of how do we make life best here in America for everybody, the rich and the poor, I think we would step back from our world policies and have a more sensible path.
You know, Sandy, it can be as simplistic as Tom from L.A. always says, we the people are the government. And once the people really believe that and realize that, then we can take back control and not have to deal with the things that come down the pike. And because the things that are coming down the pike, Sandy, you and I know we're not going to put a fence around China. Just not going to happen. It doesn't matter what we say, we're not going to do
it. Well, putting a fence around China would be like putting a noose around our neck. So, yeah, we aren't going to do that. But I'm just saying that we ought to look. The problem with the people are the government is that the people who have wherewithal and money in this country believe that that sounds like you're going to come and take our money. No, we can have a country that has richer and less rich people in it. We always will. And that's okay. But what we ought to have is a country that takes care of the welfare of its people and provides daycare and health care and the social safety net that exists in most of the developed countries of the world.
All right, Sandy, great radio, as Dave said.